Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 3, Episode 10, The Rick Turian Morty Date. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick and Morty are sick and tired of being summoned to the White House to be the president's personal ghostbuster and try to set some healthy boundaries on their relationship. It does not go well. Rick and the president get locked in an ego-driven grudge match that results in the partial destruction of the White House as well as world peace. However, Beth is freaking out over possibly being a clone, and a series of misunderstandings between her and a distracted Rick lead her to take Jerry back with both Morty and Summer standing beside their dad. Rick is now forced to swallow his pride, recognize both the president and Jerry's authority, because he finds himself unwilling to abandon his family once more.
All right, Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I think this is a good episode. It's a funny episode, but I remember you could probably hear us talk about this contemporaneously on the Bald Move podcast, but like feeling like this is a little anticlimactic. And turns out now that we found out everything there is to know, we've gone through all the commentaries, it's because this episode was neither conceived nor structurally fit to pattern of like a season finale or any kind of real cliffhanger. If anything, there was like a little cliffhanger they tried to build from the previous episode of Beth being a clone to kind of hang their hats on. But for that reason, it's not like, some of the real mind benders we've had in seasons before. It sure wasn't a season two where Rick was like arrested and put in, galactic prison.
Yeah.
The thing here is that Rick has had to eat mild crow and take the president and Jerry back into his life. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big development to me, is that Jerry's back in the family and that Rick's sort of, 100-year plan to be Rick and Morty forever and no Jerry, and I'm now the dominant force in this family, is all just ash in his mouth.
That's the one thing I like to talk about in discussion, is like how resolved is Beth in taking Jerry back? Mm-hmm. Because I don't think she exactly, logicked herself in this situation.
Dude, I have no fucking idea why she's back with Jerry at this point, other than she's just very confused about her identity
and existential breakdown.
She's grabbing on to whatever she can to make herself feel better about it.
Like, I think it's damning that Rick says, this is a problem with smart people, that they lose sight of their own identity when they're suddenly successful or happy. So she runs to the dumbest person she knows for certainty. Mm-hmm. But
I don't understand why that gives her certainty. I really don't. I watched this scene probably four times trying to figure out what is going through Beth's head. Why is this kiss important to her? Why is Jerry's intense stupidity important to her? What is the lifeline here that she's grasping onto?
I think
it's just sanity. I think she wants to desperately keep herself sane, and so she'll take anything.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's like she says, like, I can't trust anything. You're the only thing that's kind of like the test case, because we've been estranged this entire time, where I thought I'd been cloned by my father. So like, you know me inside and out, and I want to trust your judgment, because I literally can't trust any other person's judgment. But it's not the rockiest of foundations. It's not the bedrockiest. I don't mean rocky in the sense of unstable. I mean, you're not sinking these pylons in the bedrock. You're building a house on sand, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Not that house that you previously built
was quicksand that's actively dragging you down.
Smith sand. Yeah. Jerry Smith sand. Okay, some housekeeping. As has been the case for a while now, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. One big headliner, Jim, Cecil, and I have launched an entirely new network dedicated to politics and lifestyle-related stuff. It's called Swizzbold, SWIZZBOLD. If you go to swizzbold.com, you can discover and preview our two flagship shows, Three Right Turns, a political podcast hosted by myself, and One Weird Trick, an advice show podcast hosted by me and Cecily. If any of that sounds good, head over to swizzbold.com and subscribe. Over on the Bald Move side, The Watchmen is a show that needs a podcast if ever there were one, and that's what we do on We Do The Watchmen Podcast. Instant live takes and talk podcasts for club members on Sunday night with a full recap podcast. With a full analysis on Tuesdays. Our podcast, 2-Bit Encryption, we are busy decoding USA's Mr. Robot each and every week. We had a truly silent night this past Sunday with a full hour-long episode, zero spoken dialogue. What does it all mean? Find out. Our full episode recaps drop every Wednesday. American Horror Story Podcast Season 9, the 1984 podcast, comes out every Friday morning. Cecily and I are in a post-Halloween sprint to end the season. There's only two more episodes to go. Check that out on the American Horror Story Podcast. Cecily and Alexis begin their regular season coverage of His Dark Materials on Bald Move TV starting this week. Watch the first episode on HBO, then check out their weekly show on Bald Move TV. And on This Week in Bald Movies, we've got Dr. Sleep, which is the follow-up to Stephen King's The Shining. In the weeks to come, we've got Ford versus Ferrari, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and eventually in December, Star Wars Episode 9. Check it out on Bald Movies. So that's what's going on here at baldmove.com. If any of that sounds interesting, head over to baldmove.com or search for the podcast name wherever you listen to podcasts to subscribe.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Well, so I feel like we're threatening to just get right into talking the episode. We kind of already have done, so let's do it. Do you want to keep talking about the Beth stuff, or do you want to talk about the Rick stuff up front? Because I think the Rick stuff is the entertaining part. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the sizzle, and the Beth stuff is the steak, as it were. And I kind of like talking about the sizzle.
Okay, let's do it.
There's a lot of, I think, funny things that they do where they show effectively like how like kind of pissy the president's being.
Oh yeah.
Like one of them is he sends his men in a helicopter to go pick up Rick and Morty. And there's a disagreement about whether they live in Seattle or the Midwest. Either way, a lengthy helicopter ride. Mm. Rick portals to the White House and the president immediately hits him with an it's about time, gentlemen. Like, what would be the response time? That would not, it's like he's got everything is this series of negs. Like, you guys should be happy to be doing this, and I'm kind of like subtly not happy. And there's also like when they have the meeting about you know, setting those boundaries, I thought that was a pretty funny invert. Like, how is the president this dumb in this universe? That, I mean, is he aware that the Earth was taken over by aliens?
It's not dumb. He's just drawn this way. I'm taken over by aliens.
Yeah, like the Earth was under the domain of the Galactic Federation at the beginning of this episode.
The season
is like, is the actual cover story that like humanity itself rose out of the sewers and deposed the aliens? Is like there no? Does the president not know that Rick himself is responsible for like fending off? So it's weird. Like, does the show know its own history, or is the president just that dumb that he thinks he can arrest Rick and Morty when Rick has destroyed an intergalactic government?
Yeah, I mean, it does raise a question. How much does he know? Does he know that the economy collapsed because of Rick, or does he just think they mismanaged it and it collapsed, and so now here we are?
Or do people know like why the Federation fucked off from Earth to begin with? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's we talked about last episode. This is a comedy. Ultimately, none of this stuff, big stuff, really matters. But it is weird that like Earth was completely taken over and then abandoned by an advanced, sophisticated alien race. Mm-hmm.
And the president would still be so worried about the status of Rick, the godhood, or the power dynamic here, right? Because clearly there are other beings out in the universe, and we know that now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are clearly more powerful than us. They were able to subjugate us one time.
Yeah.
Why would the president be all up in arms about wanting to be the most powerful person on the playground?
Yeah. It's a weird thing where it's like almost there's like this worldwide delusion where everyone just forgot that it happened.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, like I thought is it because otherwise I really like the meeting where the president's like, look, you guys break thousands of federal laws a day. And, you know, we look the other way because every once in a while you help us out. And like how the funny scene is like Rick and Morty are like, oh, I see the problem. You think that we can be arrested.
Yeah.
Or that we're saving Earth because we're patriotic Americans, or because we have some kind of debt of gratitude for you looking the other way. When in reality, it's like we just assumed that you knew if you tried to arrest us, it would go badly.
Uh-huh.
And it's also funny that like Rick has sewn these fake like kryptonite stories about how he's susceptible to Sanchezium, mm-hmm. and he's susceptible to the pirates, and he's put all this stuff out that that the president is like in some kind of action movie set this big dossier about how do you take down Rick Sanchez if there's an Omega level Rick event. And I thought that stuff was all really funny. I thought like America's the way they portrayed America as being kind of like insecure in the face of someone with an obvious technological advantage. Like they have to invent this shitty deficit tripling off-brand version of the teleportation device. Mm-hmm. They have to, you know, shrink themselves.
Yeah, it's this weird arms race with a guy who is so good at this shit that they have no chance of competing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if we landed on the moon and the Russians sent like a mop head in a bucket,
right?
You know, and be like, well, we did it too. It's like not only are you so far behind the race, you're not even running the same one.
Mm-hmm.
I think the
Sanchezium stuff is super cool to me because this is something Rick does time and again. You know, he's so far ahead of the
Thinking
game
ahead.
That he. He's playing five moves ahead of you. He's setting up, he's controlling the narrative here, and he's controlling your future moves by planting information. And he does this in like the, what was that simulation episode where he ends up blowing up the aliens because they're trying to recreate one of his,
power the sources. Dark matter, the fuel. Yeah.
He's doing that in that episode.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, my question is, do you think that he's actually afraid of pirates? Or is this a second stage Sanchezium?
So everything that I look at here and answer questions, I have to look at the reactions of Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick's reaction here seems to me legitimate, seems to me genuine. He's genuinely freaked out by pirates, but A, I don't know why he would be.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you're right, this could be another setup so that when they try and use pirates on him later, he'll be able to say, gotcha.
I mean, Sanchezium got blown up. That spot got blown up. So, right. Like, he's doubling down on the pirates just so that when they send the Invisipirates to take him out, he'll be able to bisect them with his space lasers.
Yeah. Could be.
Or I don't know, maybe invent some kind of upgrade to his visual cortex where it on the fly maps pirates into clowns or something he's not afraid of.
Sure.
I don't know. There's... I thought that there's a lot of really funny commentary about like you know, the president illegally wiretapping or illegally spying on the Smith home with satellites. And like Morty's like, I know this doesn't look good, sir. And Rick's like, yeah, what doesn't look good in a legal satellite? Uh-huh. The whole like, you know, they had this comment about like, you know, the White House isn't. Doesn't accept being bullied by foreign powers, and the president says China doesn't piss on the White House, and Rick says, well, why would they? I'm sure it was very expensive. There's a lot of like I like and then you got like Morty going out with President and Queef. That's not as highbrow, but I like some of the back and forth that like when you know Rick just takes the gloves off and like, you know what, I'm gonna fucking humiliate you and tell you what I think about it. Mm-hmm.
And the president's just like childish, petty comebacks. Like he's literally arguing with a child about Israel or about peace accords at some point. Like,
yeah,
come on, man.
Yeah. And I really liked some of Rick's countermeasures, like the instant death as being what happened to him? He died. How? Instantly. That's terrifying.
Sure,
it's a terrifying thing to watch. He's like, why don't you just knock him out? He's like, everybody wants to be knocked out. Nobody wants to die. What kind of deterrent is that? That's like a nice little window into Rick's soul. Like, you know, he wants to lose consciousness because life is miserable, but he's also afraid of death. So, like, is Rick's perfect heaven like a stasis field?
Could be.
And I also like, I love Rick's deranged speech about like when they try to shoot him and it keeps on backfiring, keeps on backfiring. And like, there's this one military general who's like, Jesus, he's not a god. And Rick's like, you don't know what I am. You know what I could do. I'm Doctor Who in this motherfucker. And it all devolves into a complicated, I'm fucking your mom joke.
And then the guy doesn't know his mom's address. And so it evolves even further. That's maybe my favorite joke of the whole
episode. Was that Rick bluffing or was that like, has he got some kind of readout of like psychological profile manipulation type of stuff that he can like, you know, cut someone at his core at all times, which actually makes a lot of sense because he's always got, there's like something that like is constantly scanning the people he's looking at to show like what is the most, if you have to reach for the most psychologically devastating verbal weapon in your arsenal, here's the one.
And if his car can do that, and he's the most intelligent being in the universe, I would think
that's what I'm saying. He's got some kind of Jarvis AI installed in his brain. It's just like, not only is he smart, but he's augmentedly smart. Did you want to talk about the actual battle? Because like, there's a lot of like just gags that like, you know, they established the fact that there is a. What was the cocaine lounge?
The Kennedy sex tunnels,
the Truman cocaine lounge, the McKinley hooker dump, and the Lincoln slave coliseum. We see all those things except for the slave coliseum in this episode.
Yes.
And it's just they're like doing this running battle through it all. I thought that was funny. In the McKinley hooker dump, there's also like these sound stages. One of them is like the moon, implying that like maybe we did fake the moon landing, but there's another one like which...
And they just use the set of his place where he gets busy. Really fucked up.
Also, there's also a jungle set. Like, what is there some kind of conspiracy theory involving a jungle or something? Was the Vietnam War a staged event to take?
I mean, I'm sure a conspiracy exists around it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought all that stuff was funny. There's a couple of like neat references, like the president using the gravity gun from Half-Life 2 to like rough Rick up, and also the president. Like everything was kind of like he gets on this battle mech, but it looks like it's a Boston Dynamics robot dog kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys seen. I've kept up with that. They've come a long fucking way in the last few years.
I've seen the latest videos and they're frightening.
Yeah, like the devil dog from like 2 years ago, Black Mirror. These things would eat that thing for breakfast. Like they're so insanely quick and nimble, and they're going to rule us all.
I saw a humanoid robot doing a gymnastics routine.
Yes,
and it's fucked up.
Like everybody's like, ha ha! Look at the Honda's robot falling downstairs. It can walk down its stairs on fucking its pinky tips now, bitches. Yeah. What?
And
what?
Grab you by the neck and throw you through a window.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like the only thing that's limited is our shitty battery technology. Once we get that mastered, it's Skynet. We're going. One of the jokes that I played on myself is like whenever we'd watch Star Trek or like Terminator and there'd be like this talk about World War III and eugenics wars. I'm like, ha ha, boy, a stupid 60s and 70s humans really were driving us into a fucking pit, weren't they? It's all going to happen. We are going to have eugenics wars. There's going to be World War III. We're going to fucking kill the whales. Skynet's going to rule our life. But then, yeah, I don't know. Like,
unless we all get hooked on Minecraft and none of that happens because we get too lazy.
Yes.
Which I love the Minecraft stuff.
And then we go extinct as a species, but at least we're doing nonviolent fun.
Rick's analysis of Minecraft is you craft stuff to mine with, you mine stuff to craft with. Who wrote this? Jerry?
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. It's just pointless. But yet he himself at some point becomes addicted to it.
Everybody does. Like, yeah. I defy you to try Minecraft for a few hours and just try it for a few. It's like cocaine. Or heroin.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's great.
Yeah. You get really sucked into it. The other thing that I thought was really funny is like that this all is built on the president's kind of throwaway refusal to take a selfie with Morty from the Getting Swifty.
Like, yeah, and a misunderstanding between Rick and Morty, who Rick thinks that Morty is more on board with this than he actually is. And
Like, Rick's been going along with this because he thinks that his grandson thinks working for the president's cool.
Yeah, and then it kind of turns into, it evolves into just a power struggle between the two men.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Morty didn't want to do this shit because it's demeaning, it's dumb, and it's kind of boring. But, like, he doesn't want to, like, show up the president, whereas Rick very much wants to... You know, he's already taken over as alpha dog in his own household. He wants to be alpha dog of the nation, the world, and the universe, and doesn't get it done. Has to admit defeat because his whole family's turned against him, which kind of leads us into the Summer and Beth plot. Mm-hmm. What leads Beth down to like this existential crisis of thinking she's a clone is like Summer's saying, "Oh, you seem like you're a lot cooler mom because you're adjusting to the divorce."
Yeah, entirely different person.
Yeah, and there's this great scene where Beth calls Rick. Who's hitting an alien bong because he's working on the obvious, if you think about it, accords with Palestine and Israel. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I were a clone, you would tell me. And he says this very smart and I think accurate thing that like Dan's talked about a little bit on Harmontown, that like one things if you're a smart or a driven or successful person and you achieve your life's ambition is it's like it's hard to deal with the fact that you're happy now, because now it's like if you feel like you're happy, it's like, oh, it's because you must have sold out. Must be because you fooled yourself. You tricked yourself. You're putting your head in the sand about something. And he says that, like, you know, smart people are happy. They don't recognize themselves. And it's scary. And that completely satisfied her. And then right as she's about to hang up, she's like, hey, you're not going to get like next level scared that if you were a clone and I'm lying to you because I'd have to hunt you down and kill you if you gained sentience. And like her performance of like hang up the phone and her pupils like going to pinpoints and she hyperventilates and screams, I think is super fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I think she would have realized that this was a possibility eventually.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, maybe she was sated at that moment by this response, but... Yeah, when he goes into that.
I like that. So when Beth stops by to visit Jerry, he's working on a sign twirler.
Yeah, he's really going places in life.
Uh-huh.
He's really working on himself.
Every time I go like around tax time and there's a dude dressed up as a foam Lady Liberty, mm-hmm. or I go by a mattress sale place that's going out of business and someone's twirling a sign. I always think, like, do these work? Because, like, when I see that, I aggressively have bad feelings about the company. I'm like, you're making someone probably for minimum wage stand out in, like, the rain or the cold or sweltering, and they're just a human, like, blinker, like on sale flashing sign. I don't, it's drawing the opposite of attention to your business.
Yeah, it also seems like a pretty low class thing to do as a business.
Yeah.
Like it's the kind of company that I don't know that I want to necessarily.
Like there was a sign spinning guild and they had like a big, like this is like going to see like a Cirque du Soleil or act, like and like they got paid $30 an hour. And I'm like, oh, wow, the mattress company splurged for one of the sign spinners. Mm-hmm. Be one thing, but that's not remotely the fantasy that's being sold here.
No,
these are not craftsmen.
It's Badger and Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
like, they're just getting the lowest paid
it's
possible.
It's the Joker
version.
From the Joker. Yes. Like it's not associated with good things. Like, but yet it still keeps happening. So does it fucking work?
I can imagine it gets your name in front of people, and maybe they'll eventually forget the association of the sign spinning and just have the name. And so when they need that service, they go, what companies do I know
uh-huh.
that do this? Oh, there's that one company that I learned their name somewhere.
Because I always thought it's like someone's like driving home and they're like, oh fuck, I need a mattress, go to mattress. But like it's almost like this.
No, nobody who does their taxes on an impulse. Like who's gonna go to H&R Block?
Yeah.
Based on the sign they see while they're on their way home.
My accountant, but I've got my Ford's W-2s right here.
I really need to get home for dinner with my family tonight, but mm-hmm. there's a sign with H&R Block, and I do need to do my taxes.
So it's this weird reverse Jedi mind trick where they want you to grab your attention and associate with the name, but then you go home and forget about it a couple days later when you're thinking, oh, where do I want to go to taxes? Oh, there's that tax place that's
right.
Interesting.
I assume that's how it actually is effective.
It has to be. Because it's like drawing attention to your name. It's like if someone took out 30 seconds of airtime in a Super Bowl to have some ass cheek emblazoned with a company logo shit on a plate, I would never forget that company, but like I don't know that I do business with them. But I don't know, maybe a month later when I'm thinking about like, hey, I need someone to shit on a plate. Oh, yeah, it's for that one company. Beth is, we talked about this. Beth is just, she's gone crazy. She's turned herself into a mental hamster wheel, and she needs Jerry to like stop it.
Yes.
I think it's because like I identified very hard with this Midwestern like teenage dating thing. Because hey, I took a girl or two up to Conner Prairie to see Star Wars played by in Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. I thought that was a great time.
Movie theater.
Yeah.
Drive-in, whatever it
is. It's kind of like, low stakes, lame nerd dates that we inflicted on women.
Just awkward teen dates.
Uh-huh. But I love like he's like specific. Like number one, Jerry's got this thing queued up. Is that just convenient for the plot, or are we supposed to like? Is this something that Jerry rehearses or thinks about a lot? Like the time he meets Beth, is this one of his meditative practices he's doing as a divorced dad?
I imagine to him this is a defining moment of his life, and in some ways it should be.
Sure.
It was, however, a very long time ago, so you would think, yeah, some of the details might be fuzzy, but he has it on instant recall, so he probably thinks about this moment often, especially after the divorce.
Yeah,
he's got to be thinking about this moment constantly.
I mean, it just seems like it's bullshit, and it's self-serving bullshit, but it's confidently delivered self-serving bullshit.
Yeah, man, don't ask me how this convinces Beth of anything.
Yeah,
because I don't fucking know. Like, if anything, it would drive me away. But
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if you come back in season four and like Beth and it wouldn't surprise me if Beth has already kicked Jerry out. Because this feels like a very false. This feels like a false spring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if we're going to get a real one, because we've talked about at length that like Jerry and Beth just seem like they're very different people.
Yeah,
And that like one
sometimes
of them would,
that's okay.
One of them would have to change for this to work. And honestly, the change probably has to be, well, I don't know. Beth could probably ease up a little bit. But Jerry needs to get his shit together.
The change probably has to come from Beth, because he's the only one self-aware enough to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Jerry's not going to fucking change, because Jerry doesn't know that he needs to change.
I mean, like, Rick delivers this scathing, withering, like, there's no amount of intelligence and planning and cunning that can possibly keep you from wringling your parasitic tentacles and destroying the worth out of any. And he's like, well, Rick, that must have been really hard for you to admit. Thank you.
Right. Jerry is too dumb to force a change in himself.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't think he needs to. He's too lazy to do it, even if he knew he needed to keep Beth. Like,
because that's the thing. Like, if Beth's change would be to be okay with raising a man baby, the rest, like,
right.
Morty's going to move out, Summer's going to move out, but she's going to be stuck with Jerry until he fucking stops breathing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a good change. It's just a change that she would have to make.
It's a change one can make. It's a change one can make to just, like, you know, embrace the life that you've been handed to you. I understand why the kids are excited, because like this has been something that sucked for them, and it's been something that's had a negative effect. You know, Summer's huffing pottery, Morty's pissing his pants at school. This has been not good for them, and this is a sign of return to some kind of familiar stability. I understand Beth; she's crazy, and she needs someone to kind of like stop her brain from vibrating. Why does Rick, I mean, this gets to the heart of something we've been plumbing for three seasons. Why does Rick stay? What's the significance of the fart?
I don't know if the fart is that significant, but I do think he stays because this is his Beth. You know, we talked last episode a lot about the clone stuff. I came down on the side of, I think this is his Beth, And that is why he stays. Because if this weren't his Beth, it would be very easy to take Summer, take Morty, and go find another Beth.
But we know it's not literally his Beth because he's already hopped dimensions once.
Well, yeah.
So it's like, it's kind That's of like, true. is this a embracing? Because I think Morty and Summer have finally gotten over this hump that like, none of this matters. None of this is special. This is all happening across an infinite realities. I guess like,
yeah,
like
a fair question then.
I mean, but I guess is like, that's, I don't know. Like, as Rick kind of said it like last episode too, it's like, why are you special? I don't know. Maybe it's because you're special because you're not special. Maybe because you're special because something about your mom. I don't know. And it, the I guess their big realization is that even though I don't think he has an answer, he knows that there is something special to this. He can't put his finger on it yet, but it's something that he's doing something we've never seen him before, which is swallow his pride, and he makes up with the president, and he accepts Jerry as the Lord and Master of the House.
Yeah, which could have interesting consequences for next season. Yeah, because I could see a similar presidential Rick power struggle happening between Jerry and Rick.
Well, plus I think that Jerry's going to draw all the wrong conclusions. This is going to embolden, like, you've negotiated with the terrorist, and now their demands are going to be outrageous.
And they've admitted that you won.
He's an intellectual terrorist, and he's destroyed your intellectual framework. What are you going to do? Because like, what's it look like if with a Smith household where Rick is constantly the butt of the jokes?
Yeah. I don't think Rick would like that much.
The only thing else, I guess, to talk about before we get to the spoiler section is the stinger.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Yeah.
Got married, got his GED.
Got his GED. I like the subtle shade that they throw at the audience. Like, hey, we'll be back in a couple of years. Like, look what I did while I was waiting for Rick and Morty to come back. I hope you didn't fuck around and waste your life. Is there any there about like it just so coincidentally, it just so happens coincidentally that, or maybe not coincidentally, that Rick and Morty is coming back in the Christmas season. Is Mr. Poopy Butthole going to have a big white Santa Claus beard? Is he going to be Santa Claus himself?
He could.
I hope we get a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Because I like him. And some of the Community Christmas episodes are some of the best. I also, the other thing is like, it seems like the rift is healed between Mr. Poopy Butthole and the Smiths because they're part of his family, photo collection.
Yeah.
He's got special frames for him and everything.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future?
Yep.
This is where we, for the final time, open our portal guns to Dimension BM77 to access behind-the-scenes detail, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes. This will, I mean, we're done. We're caught up to real time. There's no more commentaries. There's no more connections to future plot that we can't just openly speculate about because everybody's on the same page. This is the end of a Rick and Morty era.
Justin seemed like me in this episode. He was either far too drunk or exhausted from the pace of creating this season. And I feel you, man. Just covering the season was hard enough.
Yeah. But so there's a, it looks like there's, this was kind of like a potpourri type of thing that like Dan had been kicking around this idea that he particularly liked, this Tom Baker iteration of Doctor Who that had this conceit of there's a, some kind of government liaison in the British armed forces that would coordinate with Doctor Who for paranormal or extra, extraterrestrial threats, like, you know, some aliens or Loch Ness Monster or whatever. So like the president was kind of going to be that role, and like, how does Doctor Who feel about that? And also they kicked around in the writing room several ideas. What would happen if someone tried to arrest Rick and Morty for their various crimes? Which is a weird thing to explore, because we already saw that happen with the I know we haven't seen it happen on Earth, but like, I mean, what's Earth going to do that the Galactic Federation can't?
Sure.
But it's an itch that they wanted to scratch. The other thing I thought was interesting is how like it seemed like Dan put a lot of his creative struggles with his writing partners into like this kind of passive aggressive relationship that Rick has with the president. Like he says, and what I thought was really funny is how tickled that Justin was to kind of like, really? That's what you were going for in this? And he lays all the subtext, and the presumed target of it doesn't even get it.
Yeah, and they talk a lot about how this was kind of a very makeshift finale. It wasn't something that they planned to be the finale. They thought they were having a 14 episode season. They got a 10.
These creative struggles, which I would love. What are the creative struggles? I mean, the one they keep talking about is like Dan wanting to make sure everything runs and has like, you know, logical connective tissue, and Justin always wants to do something ridiculous and crazy. You know, like we talked about Beth and Jerry, who's going to be the one to change? Who do you think has changed that allow this thing? Because apparently now they're like a finely tuned machine.
Yeah. Well, I get the impression that Dan has changed. He's every commentary I listen to him talk about this, he's constantly saying, my first instinct was this. I wanted to make all those connections. I want to do this. And I thought about it and said, what would Justin do?
You know?
And kind of leaned into that. And I think he's leaning towards Justin's end of the spectrum while also maintaining what makes him special as Dan Harmon. I would say he hasn't leaned too far in that direction.
Yeah.
And there's still a good balance.
I wonder how much Dan's longtime partner, Rob Schraub, joining the room as kind of like a director and like writing consultant. Because like by happenstance, Rob got fired from the Lego movie sequel and kind of had nothing to do. And like Dan brought him on, and kind of like it sounded like from like the Harmontown. I'm sure this is like the funniest way to, but it felt like professional kind of pity. Like, oh, my guy just had a bad setback, and he was here for me when I got fired from NBC and Community, came on the podcast. I'm going to return the favor. But it, by all accounts, it seems like Schraub is just crushing it. And one of his number one jobs on Harmontown is to like keep Dan from like, you know, becoming a monster, like kind of corral him.
Okay.
Or at least that's the comedic routine they play. And I wonder if like Rob is the honest, because Rob's also a little bit of a comic terrorist himself. Mm-hmm. I wonder if like he is able to like channel that Justin energy into the right direction, or like keep Dan's, you know, buffaloed to where he can't. I don't know. Like, what is the special? What's changed that's made this like be such a creative fucking labor to give birth every season, to where now it's like not only are they breeze through season four, but like it seems like that they're barreling down season five too. It's going to come out in record time.
Well, it's probably that season four is half the length.
Well, that's true. Trying to go for 14 episodes or whatever.
Yeah, they're going for five so far that have been announced.
I think it's still 10. I don't know.
I think it's going to be split, but
yeah, it's a so 10 episode season is split five and five, which I guess is the thing that they used to do all the time with Rick and Morty until, you know, or at least that's what they did in season one. But I don't know, because like as I've said many times, I didn't watch it season one as it was coming out. I didn't find out about it until season, like halfway through season two.
The number one thing
that
both shocked me and in retrospect makes perfect sense, because they do this to themselves, is they didn't actually know. They still don't know. They haven't decided whether Beth is a clone or not. Justin, you know, calls it Schrodinger's cat, Schrodinger's Beth, essentially. And I think that's both, that makes a lot of sense, but it also was surprising.
I mean, it's a classic. It's what like Vince Gilligan always did in the Breaking Bad writer's room.
It's what they did coming into this season too. They didn't know how they were going to get Rick out.
Yeah.
They just put him
in a situation. We're smart people. We're funny people. And I kind of liked how they acknowledged that they kind of brought the viewers into the writer room too. It's like, you know, if you're a super fan and you're reasonably intelligent and you've thought about this, then you're in the same spot that we are. Yeah. The only difference is that we have the ability to make a version canon. Mm-hmm. Like, your ideas might be better. Your ideas might be more well thought out. You know, maybe they're we have a different spin on them. But like, I thought that was kind of, I've never heard a creator say it just like that. Like, there's not really fundamentally a difference between a super fan and the writers, except for the writers get paid to take the ideas and turn them into law.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny, or pretty interesting way to do it. There's one other thing, and this has happened a couple times, but it's always been something I've understood. There's a giant ominous silence in the commentary track. Yeah. And before, like, it's happened because it seems like they were getting a little too inside gossipy about a particular person, and maybe they revealed a personal detail they shouldn't, or Russell Brand just, like, fucking went off the rails and said something between him and Roiland that it was so offensive that the powers that be is like, nope, rip that 30 seconds out. This, right as this guy whose name is Wes Archer, who was the, I think, the lead illustrator of this episode, was pointing out this T-Rex stripper that's kind of grinding in the background mm-hmm. of the forming of the obvious, if you think about it, accords.
Love it. Yeah.
Which I thought was great. Dan says, well, wait a second. There's just a character smoking, and then it freezes. And the next thing they come back is they're just in the middle of a conversation about Jerry's incident, like that was pulled from anyone's specific memory or whatnot. What the fuck could what could possibly have happened in the next 30 seconds that need to be bleeped from? Like, is there some hardcore
drug use, right?
Right, because he's smoking from a laser hookah.
Yeah, it's on the screen.
Like, they crush up and snort all kinds of stuff. Like, there's all kinds of drug use being portrayed in this series.
Alien drugs.
Yeah. So
I don't know what it was.
I don't know. But it's like, it seems like every season there's one ominous. Maybe it's just a tradition at this point. hey, we didn't have one this year. Like, well, no, they did have one. It's a Russell Brand one. So I don't know what I'm super curious about, like, what it could have possibly been that you can't just bleep it. You have to actually remove 30 seconds of context to keep people from, like, piecing it together and figuring out.
I think Marilyn Manson and Courtney Love walked in the door. And they were like, not this again.
Yeah, shut this shit down. Yeah. No, bleep it, bury it, put it in the McKinley Hooker storage room, skeletonize it. We don't want it. But you got anything else?
No, that's it.
Well, that's it. That's the last of the BM-77. Let's blow it up. Let's mm-hmm. shove it into the sun. Can't ever go back.
Ready for season 4.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @baldmove. See you next time.